Board Gaming with Education, a podcast for anyone curious about how games and education mix. We explore various topics like game-based learning, gamification, and board games, and the impacts they have on learning. Here's your host, Dustin Statz.
Welcome to Board Game with Education. I'm your host, Dustin, and I'm here with my friends from our Geek Discussion episodes. I have Jay and Spencer, and we're going to talk about our top five current two-player games. This is an extra episode that comes out after our Geek Discussion episodes on every Monday. So Jay, can you introduce yourself before we jump into the top five?
Sure. I'm Jay from CardboardEast.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And Spencer.
Hi, my name's Spencer. I own Uchacha, and we play games there. You can find me at uchacha.com or Facebook/Uchacha if you're still using Facebook. It's evil.
So let's start with Spencer this time, because this is more up Spencer's lane, down Spencer's
alley.
Up Spencer's alley.
Alley.
Up
alley.
My alley.
Two-player games. So, Spencer, you're number five.
Number five.
Without ranking it. At all.
I ranked mine.
I'm not going to rank it. They're all fun. They're all great.
That's why it's top five.
We're all
the
equal.
Anticipation
We're
for
all
number
equal.
One.
We're all loved.
Okay. You don't have like a number one, so you can do...
Well, I guess I'd say Twilight Struggle, but I'm not going to include Twilight Struggle.
I wanted
this.
The anticipation.
I'm not going to say Twilight Struggle.
Why not?
Well, I'm going to say it, but I'm going to say a different game because I know somebody else is going to say Twilight Struggle. And also, I talk about it too much.
Okay, so you're number five. No particular order for Spencer.
I'm going to say 13 Days because I want to say Twilight Struggle, but I talk about it too much. 13 Days is a nice little stripped-down version of it. I mean, it's its own game, but it basically takes all the fun elements of Twilight Struggle and subtracts a lot of the setup. There's a great back and forth, and one of the actually unique things that makes it a little different from Twilight Struggle, and I think adds a real nice, fun element to it, is that you can't go past being 5 points in the lead, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So you always have a chance, and you can never, even on the third round, if you're just cleaning up, I mean, chances are the map is going to be looking like it's in your favor, but you always got to be careful.
13 Days and Jay.
Oh, I meant to say something else too.
Yeah.
And actually 13 Days brings with it, just like Twilight Struggle, a great little story about why it's named that. 13 Days is based off of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Kennedy was president. A lot of Cold War stuff going on. Twilight Struggle 2 is from a Kennedy speech. It's just a great tie-in.
That's a game I played with Jay as well, 13 Days.
Yes.
It was good. I've only played it once, so it didn't make my list. But Jay, number five.
Well, I'm going to go with the number six really quickly. The game that should have, I want to mention it because it would have made my list. And technically, out of all the two-player games that I've been playing this the most often. But I have been playing Twilight Struggle, the app version, which came out 3 years ago, I'm sorry. And I've been playing that quite a bit. I think I have 3 or 4 games going with friends who live overseas. And it just flows so much more smoothly. I play against the AI and I lose all the time because I crank it all the way to the highest setting and I finally got to the mid-war. But there's no setup. There's no calculation. Like every time you play a scoring card, it does it for you automatically. It's very, very smooth. And I just wanted to mention that, number six. And number five, because I've been in this Twilight Struggle mood, is Dual Powers Revolution 1917, about the Russian Revolution of 1917. Dual Powers was a Kickstarter from last year, and backers just got it very, very recently. And it's a two-player game, and I think we'll find this as a common theme of like most of our two-player games, at least mine have been like war-based. And it's an area control, area influence, hand management, where you pull your cards from the same deck of cards, and each card will either you recruit more units or move units. What's really interesting is that it plays the entire revolution. Like you go through I think where it begins in March 8th to where it ends in November 7th. And every card you play eats up time from the calendar. So this card might move the game up a week or 2 weeks or a day. And that is different because certain days of the year can trigger special events. And that's Dual Powers Revolution 1917.
And my number five is not a war game. I actually don't think I really technically have a like a real war game on
you
my
CAD.
List.
Well, I mean, Dual Powers really isn't a war game per se.
What is a CAD?
A cadet.
CAD, it's not like an acronym?
You CAD, you fiend. I don't know English. It's a good thing I'm not an English teacher. Shh.
All right, so my number five is Feast for Odin. So a few of my lists are not only two-player games.
Oh, I took mine as strictly two-player games.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know if I have a top
five.
Dustin
didn't do his homework.
God, slacking.
Cheating.
So Feast for Odin, in a lot of my games, I guess I play with my wife. I think all of them are Grace and I play together. But Feast for Odin, we played a few times, maybe six or seven times recently. Really like that game. I don't know how well it would work with more players because there's so many actions you can take in the game.
It
basically,
it's the biggest Uwe Rosenberg game.
Yeah, you're trying to build a Viking village.
Island.
Right, yeah. So
how many islands can you do?
I've only bought one before and then I lost. So you acquire more islands and you try to send your people off to different to become Vikings, I think.
Yeah. Oh, you are Vikings and you feast. I thought it was Feast of Odin for a long time.
I thought it was Fist of Odin.
Feast. So that's my number five, Feast for Odin. Is it of Odin?
No. It's not. You're not eating Odin.
All right. Oh, so Spencer. Number four, Spencer.
Number four.
Well, I'm gonna sidetrack just a little bit since Jay said a six. So I'm going to say a six and 6.5. just because I want to talk Codenames Duet, I thought about putting that on there, but I just, I need that element of sticking it to the other player. So I'd want to say Lost Expedition, but I've talked about that too much. So I'm going to say Fox in the Forest just because it's a very different game. It's a trick-taking game, and it has some cool elements to it. One of it being that if you're winning by too much, you get 0 points. So you have to balance how many you win. How many hands you win, how many tricks you win, to how much you lose. So basically, if you're really cleaning up and taking all the cards, you gotta crank the brake and go, can't win by too much. Oh, and the art's really cool.
Every time I play that game, I always think of, is it the Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Mm. But the art's a lot more like Secret of Kells kind of art. Looks cool.
Okay. Number four.
And
my number four. Okay.
Jay, your number four?
My number four is the oldest game on my list. It came out in 2004. That's 15 years ago. It is Dungeon Twister. Dungeon Twister is a two-player game, even though there was an expansion where now you could play it with three or four. But the original base game, you can only play with two, so strictly two. It is a perfect, I guess, hybrid of like Dungeon Crawler and Euro game. In Dungeon Twister, you play a set of heroes, of eight heroes, I guess your opponent who has the exact same eight heroes, and you have these eight tiles laid out in front of you. And each tile, there's a certain space on that tile where you can twist it and rotate it. And it feels more like, I don't know what to say, like American football. Like you have to find a treasure and then run it to the end zone. And it's always tricky because you want to rotate a room so that way your one particular person is in front of another person. You can attack them. You have a fireball that does like instant death for another character, but you have to have the wizard to get that wand. It's really, really fascinating. And it almost feels like chess in a way because there's very, very little luck and very little randomness to this game. And it's been in my collection for a long time. The expansions create more characters and create more difficult terrain like fire, undead, necromancers. Just one random dragon head that doesn't even move. And I would definitely say, definitely give it a try if you could find it. It's becoming increasingly harder and harder to find. And that is Dungeon Twister by Asmodee.
And my number four is Terraforming Mars, another one that is not strictly two players. All of mine are strictly not two players, except for one. One is strictly two players.
We'll applaud you for that.
We'll let you know.
All right. And again, Grace and I play this game. We have played it a lot. We haven't had any of the expansions. We played with the expansions with like five of us. And for us, I think it was a little too much of the game. We enjoyed it without the expansions. I also think because when we played, there were like three expansions that we were using to play on
was
top
that
of the base
hooch?
Game. Yeah.
And I kept asking, are you still playing that game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would. I think Terraforming Mars is a great game. It's not the most amazing game, but I think it's really, really good engine building game. I would highly recommend, though, that you play with Prelude expansion because it cuts 30 minutes out of the game.
Yeah, actually, I remember playing it with the Prelude. It was.
We played with the Prelude.
Like it.
Prelude
it,
and.
Just play with expansions. Prelude just by itself. I think it's fine.
So Terraforming Mars is my number four, and Spencer, you're number three.
Number three.
I'm also going to pick an old game, but a really old game, because I feel there's a lot of games that are coming out, basically, and people have a tendency to throw out, you know, checkers, chess, backgammon, all of these games that are classically good games, but because they're old and everybody knows them and not, you know, maybe don't have a narrative.
Are you talking about games or yourself, Spencer? We love you too.
I'm not obsolete. But I'm going to pick one out of all those that is my favorite, and that's Stratego. Stratego is still a very relevant, fun game. Yeah, I almost said Chinese checkers. Chinese chess. If you ever get a chance to learn that, it's fun. But Stratego, the setup is super easy. You can understand it in the first game, which is really rare for games. Usually you have one playthrough and you're at a disadvantage because you don't know how to play. But this, you can pretty much grasp right away what you're doing. You know, higher number beats a low number. Even numbers kill each other. Other than the spotter, you know, there's nothing complex about it. And I've had some great games with it, very memorable games. And I will always remind people that I play with that I beat them.
I have a lot of great memories of playing Stratego with my older brother. And now Stratego has been licensed so many times that there are tons of themes for it. So you could pick a theme that fits you.
I've only seen the futuristic one and the old one.
There's one for Lord of the Rings.
I should have that one.
Yeah, Stratego was a lot of fun growing up too. I had a lot of fun playing that game.
I mean, you could make your own Stratego. I mean, stuff.
Number three for me is 13 Days, the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1945. Spencer, that was Spencer's number five, I believe.
Yep.
I love Twilight Struggle. I'm terrible at Twilight Struggle, and I don't always have time to play Twilight Struggle because it's a big, you know, a big game. It could go to 3 hours or four if your person that you're playing with takes their time. 13 Days kind of distills everything down to a nice 30 to 45 minutes, and it's really tense. I think I don't want to say it's a watered down version of Twilight Struggle because I think that does the game an injustice. Because it's a shorter game, because it's a tighter game, it can be a little bit more intense and definitely not as swingy. And you can definitely come back.
Do you remember that one game we played? There was one where you really came back and just sideswiped me. I'm trying to remember how that
went. Oh, yeah. No, yeah, that's every game. but I really like 13 Days because I still have that same feel that I get when I play Twilight Struggle, where I could play my card for the command or for the event. And you could pop that event off if you want to or not. So there's a lot of tense decision making in a 30 to 45 minute game. That's 13 Days, my number three.
And my number three, I will switch to Stratego just so you guys wouldn't call me a cheater. No, it's Pandemic Legacy. But this one is actually a lot of people suggest playing this two players and controlling two people.
Okay.
So what Grace
pretending
and I do.
Pretending you're having two other friends?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Just making sure.
You're so mean. So what Grace and I do, we each get a character and play as two characters. Yeah. So Pandemic Legacy is my number three.
To be fair, like I played Pandemic Legacy. Most of the months that we played were just me and my friend Ben. And I think we had...
So sad.
No, I think it's because...
I'm joking.
But I also had the added benefit that Ben came in from out of town and that we played through a whole weekend. So in like 48 hours, we finished the game. That was an intense weekend.
Well, if you remember, I talked about playing with my cousin 12 hours of Monopoly, so I have no room to speak.
So you're number two, Spencer.
Number two!
My number two is Hive. Hive is another one of those games that you can, it's rare. You can pretty much grasp the game right away. You explain to people what they are. Pretty much everything's intuitive. I mean, a grasshopper hops, you know? And the really unique part about this game is that you don't need a board. And it's very intuitive how everything moves around. I mean, you grasp the fact that the pieces can't squeeze through another piece if they're blocked off. And it's such a simple game, but the strategy is super deep. I played a friend that I talked to the first time, and I was thinking, man, I'm killing him in my head over and over and over again as he was refusing to put more pieces down. He kept moving his queen. Come to find out, he's a very adept Go player. And if you've ever played Go, it takes some brain power. And anyway, at one point, I realized, uh-oh, I can't move. Wait, I really can't move. And I had no more pieces to put down. And I looked up and realized he knew exactly what he was doing. And then he mopped the floor with me. I literally couldn't move the rest of the game. He just placed pieces around my piece. He just strung me out.
I like Hive. I like how you don't need a board.
Play on the bar. I mean, it's one of the few games we actually, I can literally stand there and serve people and... you know, play Hive while it's happening.
Jay?
My number two is the most recent game on the list, and it's the Hive Killer, meaning that I don't really want to play Hive anymore, and that's Soloween. It's a Taiwanese board game by Play With Us Design. Came out this year.
Can you say that name again?
Soloween. It's like Soul and Halloween put together.
Oh.
It's not a name that they invented. It came from a macabre animated short that you could find on YouTube called Deathigner. It's one of my most recent reviews that you can see on cardboardeast.com. It's a two-player abstract game, and it's you play on a grid of 4x4, so 16 squares, and it's kind of like Othello or Connect Four, where you just need to make a chain of four colors of all the same. I mean, two or four pieces of all the same color. And that's complicated because the theme is that we are all students or teachers in a death god school. And depending on which character you have, you score your chain differently. So someone might be able to score them if they're in a square. Someone will score them if they're in a checkmark shape. Someone will be able to score them after they score. Like you can only score with one color as opposed to either two colors. And I love this game so much because it takes a very little to zero table space, highly portable, and the entry point is so low. I could teach you how to play the game in a minute. And I took this with me on my most recent international trip, and I played it everywhere. I played it at the airport, I played it at a bar, I played it at on top of the Tokyo Tower. I played it at a bar once and even had an impromptu tournament because people kept on standing and wanting to play. And that is my number two, Soloween.
I want to play that game, so I have to bring it by sometime. My number two is KeyForge. And
is that one actually two player?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
So okay.
Awesome.
Yes.
Are you going to go to the KeyForge tournament?
There's a KeyForge tournament. You know who should go to a KeyForge tournament? My wife, Grace. She kills me. Every single deck. I have three different decks, and she's probably won 70% of the time.
So if your wife is that good at KeyForge, you and Grace should both go to the KeyForge tournament later this month.
Either that or I'm that bad. I don't know. So KeyForge, I like it because it's not necessarily like Magic. And I've talked about this before. I like Magic, but I don't like to have to spend a lot of money to get a good deck. And with KeyForge, you just get a deck and that's what you're stuck with. But I was looking, and there's 104 septillion possible deck combinations. So basically, you do not get the same deck as anyone else. Well, I'm sure Asmodee would be pretty excited if they sold more than 104 Septillion decks.
There isn't that much money on the planet. Each deck is also incredibly cheap. I think it's 10 USD or 300 NT dollars. It's so popular in Taipei and so on that they sold out.
Yeah, I was surprised they were selling them at the Taipei Game Show, and I got them for a pretty decent price compared to how much they were.
See, I'd really like to do a KeyForge tournament just for the fact that I'd like to learn how to play.
I'll teach you. So that's my number two.
KeyForge. I don't think it's a great game. It's a good game. It's a little too swingy for me, but it is fun. Every time I have played, I have had a gas. The thing that I most appreciate about it, because I used to play card games competitively, is that, and the problem with that is that you're not playing the player's deck. You're playing the best deck that's there. So someone posts their deck, and then everyone copies that deck. So you're playing...
You're talking Magic, right?
Yeah.
You also do Netrunner.
Every LCG or CCG does that. So you're playing against the deck that's popular. And with a deck that's designed, you can't do that. You can't deck build. So you're forced to study this deck in particular and learn how it works. And I really, really appreciate that part of the design.
All right, so let's get back to the top five, even though KeyForge is a great game. Number one.
My number one is Seven Wonders Duel, because it is the only game I can get my wife to constantly play with me. In fact, she brings it up on her own, which means she really likes it. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's got some decent strategy. It's also got a lot of kind of pusher luck a little bit and building your economy. It's just fun. Every game's different.
Do you like playing with the expansion?
I do. It's a different game, though. Giving you an option not to draw a card is a powerful option. And I think actually it adds to the strategy. It makes it a more strategic game and takes away a little bit of the random chance or risk of pulling a card that will reveal a bunch of cards that you know are going to be really good. And it can really, then you can count cards as far as like, well, I can't let her grab another military card, right? I can pull from one of these and switch up the draw card order. Whereas before you could only do that by putting it in a wonder and having a repeat turn.
My number one is Star Wars Rebellion by Fantasy Flight Games. I love it so much because, one, I love the theme. Two, I really love the cat and mouse aspect of it. In the course of the game, there are, I forget how many planets there are, maybe 30, 31 planets or so. The Empire is huge. It has pieces all over the galaxy. And as the Rebel player, you're hiding your base. And you are going on these little pot shots here and there, fighting these battles. You can never attack the Empire head on because you will lose. And I love this cat and mouse game that it plays. To win as the Empire, all you have to do is find the Rebel base, crush it, kill it, and then you win the game. To win as the Rebels, you have to stall the Empire. And there are these two counters that you need to have them meet each other. So you can only do that by stalling the Empire, by prolonging the game, and completing these other missions. And I love this because it's very, very thematic. It has all the same beats. Like someone will get frozen in carbonite, but it may not be Han Solo. It might be Princess Leia. And someone might get turned into the dark side. It may not be Luke. It could be Princess Leia. So Princess Leia could be an evil character in the game. And the miniatures are great. The pacing of the game is great. And it's very, very tense. That's my number one, Star Wars Rebellion.
And my number one is another one that can be played with up to four players. Five. Five if you use a helper app, and that's Gloomhaven. I really like Gloomhaven, but my friend Rich, a previous host, has went back to the States. But we played that just two players, and we got through about half of the game. And about half of the game is probably 80 hours, maybe even more, maybe 120. I would say like 3 hours per game, and we probably played 40 games. So 120 hours of that game, and I still enjoy it. So it's a cool
mechanical. What about it do you enjoy?
I like the strategy, like with my character to kind of manipulate the battlefield, and based on the cards you play and your initiative or how you go in the turn, I might have to change up the strategy I had initially planned to do. And so I like to kind of think about, well, what two cards could I play down based on these monsters that I know they have a tendency to do these types of things? What two cards can I use to change my strategy in case something else happens? So I like that. And I like the story. We talked about that before, too. The story is a big part of it, but I think the players contribute to making that story a little bit more enthralling, more engaging. You have players, like I was documenting story by story, gameplay by gameplay, what happened. And so people could, in our group, could read about it. But our group quickly went down to just Rich and I.
We should do a Gloomhaven episode because all three of us have played and we could all share our thoughts on it.
Spencer doesn't like Gloomhaven, though.
But I could play it.
Yeah,
It's not just Gloomhaven. I just don't care for
it. I love Gloomhaven. I don't really think of it as a two-player game, but I think it probably plays best with three characters.
Yeah, I would say three is probably the best. Four, maybe it might take a little longer. I don't know. I enjoy games that take a while.
No, I don't see anything different between changing it from four to three, other than that there are more monsters. But I think going from two to three is a big difference. I think you really notice that change. And I think with three characters, not necessarily three players, three characters, I think it works the best. Because that way you could have more, there's more variety in your party. So you could have a secondary character, you could have one tank, and then you could have something else. That's just for fun. I want to say that like this list is not my top five two-player games of all time. I took your message as my current top five two-player games.
Current top five.
These are the games that I'm currently playing or in the mood to play right now.
So those are our top five current two-player games, right? Maybe not of all time, but recently we've been playing. So thank you again for coming by and sharing your top five lists. And we'll see you and hear from Jay and Spencer soon. Before we go, Jay and Spencer, where can they find you?
At oochacha.com or Facebook/oochacha. Or, you know, if you really wanted to, you go to northernrealm.blogspot.com. If you want to take a look at the pen and paper.
You can find me at cardboardeast.com or on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Or if you want to hit me up for a two-player game of Twilight Struggle, my iOS handle is Evil Panda King.
If you want to hit me up for Twilight Struggle, put out a game board, take a picture of your turn, send it over to me. I will do the same.
And take a trip back to 2005.
I think Spencer's craving some Twilight Struggle.
I definitely
take the app, man. It's so good. It's so good.
All right. So thank you guys again, and thank you for listening.
You are so welcome.
Thank you for listening in this week. If you like what you heard, be sure to let us know. You can find us on social media as Board Gaming with Education or BGE Games, or email us at podcast@boardgamingwitheducation.com. If you want to support our podcast, be sure to check out our support page on our website. As always, teach better, learn more, and most importantly, play more. Thank you for listening, and until next time.